Noble Dairy Queen's new summer blizzard menu is back, and it is stacked. Dive right into the summer celebration with their new peanut butter cookie dough party blizzard. You can sink your red spoon into their world-famous DQ soft serve, filled with delicious chunks of chocolate chip cookie dough, swirls of creamy peanut butter topping, and peanut brittle crunch with sprinkles. If the peanut buttery flavor isn't your jam, their fresh take on cobbler a la mode certainly will. Say hello to the Picnic Peach Cobbler Blizzard. You can also let your taste buds crumble with the Ultimate Cookie Blizzard that features Oreo, Chips Ahoy, and Nutter Butter pieces. Dairy Queen knows everyone loves a good comeback, and fan favorite Blizzard flavors Frosted Animal Cookie, Brownie Batter, and Cotton Candy have made their triumphant return. Summer Blizzard flavors are now available at your Noble Dairy Queen stores with locations in Kankakee, Bourbonnais, Moments, and Manteno. Happy tastes good.
People tend to stick to you after time. Places tend to do the same as we do.
Hello and welcome to Kankakee Podcast, where we talk about the people and places of Kankakee County. I'm Jake Lamore, and this is a continuation of what we're calling our Pathfinder episodes, where we sit down with different staff members and co-workers of Pathfinder. If you missed the news, back in June of this year in 2023, Kankakee Podcast was acquired by Pathfinder, which is a full marketing agency housed right here in the heart of downtown Kankakee. And the person we are talking with today is Chief Creative Officer Brian Prairie.
Hello, everyone.
Welcome, Hello. Welcome. I should say welcome back, because we did do like a Pathfinder announcement episode in June.
We did.
You were a part of that along with Jesse and Logan Catherine.
Yeah.
So, but we thought it would be good to sit down with everyone individually and just really deep dive into learning about you.
Yeah, and we all have really interesting backgrounds and stories, so I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. So with you, you're born and raised in Kankakee County.
Yeah, I was born and raised in Kankakee County. I was born in born at St. Mary's Hospital. I grew up, actually, in Clifton. And
Clifton's an Iroquois, though.
Yes, Clifton is an Iroquois. And yeah, mom and dad still live there. It's like a 175-year-old farmhouse. Like, it's really old. Grew up, you know, playing in the yard and just, you know, hanging out with my brothers and my sister. I got two brothers and a sister.
So were your family or was your family farmers, or did you just happen to live
it's a farmhouse. I think it was one of probably the first houses in Clifton, but it was a farmhouse once upon a time. And now it's, you know, it's in a neighborhood.
Okay.
Much of a neighborhood as Clifton.
Hey, let's give Clifton some credit.
Well, no, it's a very small town.
Yes, it is.
So it is in itself, it's a neighborhood.
It really is. No, you're absolutely right. I tell my Chicago suburb friends or Chicago area friends, anytime they come down to like my hometown of Manteno, they're like, oh, this is such a small town. You know, I'm like, are you kidding me? It's like, Manteno is nothing compared to the towns that are just a little
bit
further
south.
Away. It's like, yeah,
keep getting
going.
Smaller.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, exactly. After Kankakee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Until you get to Champaign, really.
Pretty much. Yeah. Because even Gilman is.
Oh, yeah. It's a bunch of soybean or corn fields and then little towns from here to there. So, grew up doing the, some regular kid stuff, you know, played with my brothers and catch and basketball and all that kind of good stuff. So, yeah.
Clifton, has Clifton really grown since you?
If anything, it might have shrank.
I'm just curious.
I don't know. I think it was always somewhere between 1,500 to 1,200 people.
Okay.
And I was also did I raise an eyebrow like as a kid. It's like, I haven't seen that many people. Like, there's who are they counting? Are they counting the livestock as well? Or because I was like 1,500. That seems like a lot.
The chickens and the tractors and combines.
Right. I mean, so like coming to Kankakee was a treat. Like that was like, you know, we would go to town to get groceries, to, you know, go out to dinner, go to the movies and stuff like that. But yeah, we generally stayed in Clifton and, you know, kind of, you know, did the family kind of stuff.
And I can't remember, are you the youngest or the old?
I'm in the middle. I am the eldest. I am the eldest Prairie, boy number one. And then there's my sister Julie, and then my brother Adam, and then my little brother Chris.
Yes. And Adam, I always forget if it's Adam or Chris or both of them that did the Hoots.
Yes. They're still doing. Adam and Chris are in the Hoot Hoots. Yes, okay. They are currently established in Seattle, and they actually just did a show not too long ago. They haven't played in a while, but they did a live show a few weeks ago, actually. So yeah,
they're still out in Seattle.
Yeah, okay. So they're still doing their thing, and loving doing it. So yeah, that's, if you get a chance, if you're listening, listen, go to Bandcamp and search the Hoot Hoots. They're a fun band.
We need to have them come back to Merchant Street.
I think so. Because they had a really good time when they came. Also, because they've played a few different kinds of music venues and music festivals, and they were like, this is a Merchant Street Music Fest is one of the top notch festivals. They were surprised when they came back and saw the, you know, just the diversity of people and the quantity of people and just the quantity of music acts as well. They were kind of flabbergasted by all of that. It'd be great if we could get them to come back. And I have a few say in some Merchant Street things, so maybe I can, you know, maybe push that forward and see if we can get the Hoot Hoots back at Merchant Street.
Yeah, I'd be all for that.
That'd be fun. Yeah. That'd be fun for me as a family, but I always love listening to their music because it's kind of nostalgic for me, but also, you know, I don't know, it's always, their music is always so very fun. It's very just bouncy and it references Nintendo games and some life in Clifton and, you know, just some very random things, you know, but all things kind of, you know, that we loved growing up.
Where did they get the music bug from? Did it come from anyone in the family? Did you play at all?
Yeah, actually my dad and his brothers were in a band when he was, man, he was pretty little when they started playing. He was maybe 9 or 10 when they, I think they were called the Prairie Brothers, and they played when there was a venue on one of the islands out there by Moments.
That would be it's on the tip of my tongue and I can't think of it.
It's not Eagle. Might be Eagle Island. But there used to be like a restaurant or something.
Yes. Yes, there was.
On Eagle Island. And him and his brothers used to play all the time. And I think, and he got that from his dad. Like, my dad played the drums and his brothers played, I think, the guitar. They had two other brothers that play the guitar. So I think that's the thing too. Like, my dad loves playing music. My mom is creative as well. So the creativity bug definitely is well and alive in our family.
But you never played?
I never played.
Did you try anything?
I just recently, like within the last 5 years, I started teaching myself guitar. And I would like to say I'm still teaching myself guitar.
Well, it's a journey that never ends, especially.
Well, yeah, and especially as much as I practice, because I feel like, you know, a month goes by and then I'll play it, you know, probably pretty religiously for a couple months, and then another month will go by and then kind of forget all the chords again and have to do it. Owning a business, you don't have a whole lot of free time.
No, definitely not.
But I do. I mean, it's something I do. I do truly. I've always loved music, and I picking up the guitar was something very. It was more. It was a meditative activity for me. So because it would. because when you're playing, because you play as well, when you're playing, like, that's the only thing you can really focus on. If you're worrying about, you know, this bill or this project, or things start, you start messing up and get frustrated. And at least that's what I do. So I knew right away, okay, this is, I have to basically be here. I have to be present for this instrument and play it, because if I'm not, I'm going to get really frustrated and then be angry and just put it down and let it gather some dust.
So music, you know, your brothers kind of really took that torch heavy after your father.
Yes.
And then for you, how did the, what was your first, like, creative venture, I guess you could say, or a first example of your creativity starting to show?
Was it
immediately like film, you know, photo, anything like that right away? Because obviously that's what you do now.
Yeah, actually, no.
And you've been doing most of your life. But yeah, what was that first form of creativity?
The first form of creativity, like, I've been doodling and drawing on every surface that possible that I could since I can remember. Like, I'll take some pictures and we can post on the podcast.
Cool.
But I have a bunch of old notebooks that have, like, you know, drawings of Garfield and Calvin and Hobbes. Like, that's what spoke to me. So I was like, oh, I want to learn how to, you know, and also drawing was always something that was just, I thought everyone could do. It was something that just kind of came naturally to me. I was always just kind of doodling something, much to the chagrin of my teachers. Like, there would literally be, you know, doodles of things on all of my homework and all of my tests and stuff like that. And, you know, when a test would be bad, they would be like, hey, Brian, you should focus more on the test than the doodling. And so
but there's a really good Garfield on here.
Exactly. I probably actually still have some tests with some doodles on them laying around.
That's great.
But yeah, I love drawing comics. I always loved characters. Like, I was always drawing, like, you know, in the style of, like, Jim Davis from Garfield, and then Bill Watterson from Calvin and Hobbes. Those were my muses. Like, is the Sunday comics even still a thing? I always read the Sunday comics. Like,
yeah,
that was always something.
I'm pretty sure it's still a thing now, since the Journal, at least for the Daily Journal newspaper, it's Saturdays.
Okay.
But I'm pretty sure there's still the Sunday, or the, you know, the comic
Sunday
strip.
Insert or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's still the comics.
That's
in
good.
There.
That
yeah.
makes me happy. Because yeah. that is really, that, yeah, that was, I would draw Batman, whatever I could get my hands on. And anything that I thought was cool. And then I think I drew some of my invitations for, like, my 10th birthday party. Like, so I would, my mom would, like, put it to work sometimes, you know? So I was like, oh, hey, well, you can draw ones. Also, that's the thing too. Like, she was good at calligraphy, and she also decorated cakes. So she had that kind of drawing, you know, bit in her too. So I think I kind of, you know, I get that creativity and that kind of, you know, at least the, you know, the muscle memory and the ability to kind of draw something freeform. I got that, I think, from her. But yeah, it was always drawing. I didn't really think about art or creativity or drawing until college. Like, I didn't really, like, even in high school, I was just kind of doing it because I could. Like, it was something that was.
In a world of taco, so-so, Taco John's believes you deserve better. Better tacos, better burritos, better everything. You deserve 100% North American beef and crispy taco shells cooked in-house every day for peak freshness. Better sauces, hand-cut sirloin steak, and our world-famous potato olays served hot and crispy every time. Luckily for you, better is what we do. Come taste what we're about at Taco John's. Bigger, bolder, better. Download our app, earn free food. Taco John's valueist menu always gives you the most bang for your buck. For a limited time, get our new beefy tostada with perfectly seasoned 100% North American beef for $3, or our savory new refried bean tostada for just $2. With layers of cheddar, house-made pico de gallo, and queso fresco all atop a crispy tostada shell, it's also a lot of bang for your bite. New tostadas are here for a limited time. Only at Taco John's. Bigger, bolder, better.
You weren't an aspiring comic book writer
or
cartoonist or
I would just do it because I could, and I love to do it. And then when someone would ask me to, you know, hey, draw something for the paper, or draw something for the, like, here you go. Okay. And then that was done. And then I would, you know, do my own thing. I just never thought of it as something to aspire for, something to even go into. It was just, it just wasn't even on my radar until college. And also I was a good student, but school didn't do it for me. I was just kind of like going through the motions. You know, I got decent grades, but nothing. And I think if I would have kind of thrown myself into some art classes or something, like I would have, you know, had a better experience.
Well, a creative person not doing well in school?
Right. Right.
So unheard of.
Yeah, exactly. I got bored with it. So after high school, I was almost just like, I don't know what I'm going to do with my life. Luckily my mom and my dad both were like, go to college, figure some stuff out, you know, take some. And this is the thing too, like I took some, so a little history of Brian here is,
yeah.
I went to KCC first year, and in a very typical Brian fashion, I took all of my gen eds at once so that I could just get them out of the way. And I almost then just stopped going because this was just high school part two. And I was like, I'm sick of this. I almost didn't go back until my mom was like, hey, idiot, take some art classes. Like, and she didn't call me an idiot, but I was like, it was pretty dumb of me to like, just like, cause she's like, I know what you did. Cause you're a lot like me. And this is what I would do. Get all the stuff you don't want to do out of the way. But now you're burned out. Like, you don't want to do this.
Yeah.
So take some of the art classes. Once I took art classes, I fell in love with every single type of art. I love drawing. Well, of course I love drawing because I've been doing that since I was a kid, but I love painting. I love watercolor. I love sculpture. I love like mixed media. I mean, I didn't even know some of these art forms were even in existence until I started doing things at KCC. And kudos to the KCC art department. They really brought the artist out of me in a great way. After that, then I was just like, I don't know what the heck I want to do with, you know, my life. I was also thinking, I want to be a starving artist. I want to use this power for good. I want to be able to like survive off of this.
Yeah, you want to be able to make a living.
Yeah. So I once I started looking for a secondary college after KCC, one of the first and handful of schools I was looking at was Columbia College in Chicago. And didn't really know what to do, so I just was like taking a random tour there with one of the guidance counselors there, and you know, kind of walked around, and we went to all the art departments, and there's a lot of them, and I was leaning towards a few, but one of the ones that was really interesting to me was animation, the drawn animation, and then this is going to date me a little bit, but I think the second Toy Story was coming out right around then, so like 3D animation was like brand new and like really hot, like right around that time. Like everybody was just like, oh, this is so cool. And more colleges were offering these courses like that. It was so new at Columbia that the animation department didn't even have a degree. So the reason why I have some of a film background and why I leaned into some of that is because I have a film degree with a concentration in animation. It wasn't even an animation degree yet. I found my people again at KCC, but then I found my people again in Columbia. I found that my people are artists. Like, creatives. Okay. These are my people. And what was great about, So a little step back is like I didn't really like computers or technology at all. I thought that was a tool that was bastardizing the art you know, I was like, Photoshop, no.
So that was before college.
That was during college, because I didn't really have any experience working with any computers.
You were physically using your hands.
I was drawing, cutting, and painting and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, and you know, I came from a family of four, and we didn't have money for a computer. We always got everybody kind of else's hand-me-downs, and I used computers, and I just always struggled with them, and it was always just something clunky. It wasn't really until I got into, like, as I was exiting KCC and entering Columbia, where I got hit in the head with a hammer. It was like, oh, a computer is another tool, like a pencil or a paintbrush or a canvas. You just need to know how to use it, or find one of your buddies to know how to use it and tell you how to, like, problem shoot these things that you're having troubles with. Because that would be the thing that would struggle with me. Something would crash or something would not go right, and I'm like, ah, screw it. You know, I'm not going to deal with this anymore. I know how to do this in the real life and not on the computer.
Yeah.
But once I figured that out, I feel like, you know, whenever I tell these stories, like, it's like that kind of with anything in my life. Like, once I figure it out, it's like, oh, game on. It's like, I'm going to figure this out. And
the light bulb kind of goes off in your head.
So I almost kind of double majored in traditional animation, drawn animation, because that's what called to me, but also 3D animation. And that kind of was a little scary for me at first, because I was like, oh, I don't know too much about computers. But what was interesting when I was taking those classes, I noticed all of my classmates were really good at computers. Like, only like a handful of them, most, like the lion's share, were good at computers, but a handful of them had an art background, and I was one of those. And they could, you know, make a cup and make a desk and do all of these things. And then I could come up with something, you know, something creative. Like, one of my first projects was like making this like kind of almost Game of Thrones kind of throne room, like with like these kind of jaggedy things with this throne on it. And
it was 3D,
and it was in the 3D program. And everybody was just like, whoa, that's really cool. You know,
that's not a cup.
I made a mug. You know, it's like, okay, yeah. So I knew about, you know, proportions in 3D space and kind of perspective and stuff like that. And for me, that was the harder thing for all of them to learn. Like, learning the tool was easy. Learning how to, you know, learning the, you know, perspective and color theory and all those other things, that part was a little harder to, you know, grasp and kind of move forward. So once I found that, I kind of, you know, I was basically like, I found the people that were, you know, maybe a little bit better than me in the computer world. And then, like, hey,
you kind of worked with them.
I'll work with them. And like, yeah. I'll show you kind of, you know, when I'm seeing things, like,
well, this is what's inside my head.
Right.
I don't know how to completely animate that in this 3D program.
Right.
Can you help me?
And then, I would help them too. Like, you know, if they were having trouble, like, kind of think of something a little bit more outside the box, then that's where I would offer my assistance as well. And then, you know, okay, so moving from college, I did struggle many years of just trying to find something consistent.
Were you looking to just be an animator, or what did you learn film-wise when you were at Columbia?
So to get my animations onto something, I had to, well, and also part of the film degree, you had to take some actual, like, so I like actual film classes. So I actually exposed film. I used like a crank film camera that you could take 12 seconds of footage and then you have to re-crank it again. So,
yep.
I tell everybody to this day, like, that made me a better shooter because of that. Cause I know what went into it. And also too, like, being a poor college student, like, so they would give you the first roll of film, and then if you messed any film up, then you had to buy your own. So I messed up my first roll of film. Like, I exposed, like, it got exposed.
Yeah, you can't do that.
It got exposed, or I can't remember if it got exposed, or it didn't advance, or maybe a little bit of both. And that's the thing too, like, back in that day, like, it was a 3-day turnaround. Like, I turned it in. It would take a day, and then I'd get it back. And so I get it back, And it's like, oh, crap. This is, none of this works.
Yeah, so, this footage is terrible. It's just, like, it can't see anything.
It's just black. Or yeah, and there's no footage because it didn't advance right. So
yeah,
you learn real fast. You're like, okay, well, that's never going to happen again. So so that's kind of where the film came in. And even not so much the photography just yet, but I feel like I always had the eye. You know, I could see the image. You know, I could visualize that image pretty easily. It was just something that came naturally to me. So after college, yeah, I kind of, you know, did a lot of freelance here and there, and just couldn't find something consistent.
And was it, when you were doing freelance, was it a lot of shooting, or were you getting animation?
I was doing graphic design. I was doing a little bit of animation. I was doing a little bit of this, that, and the other thing.
Yeah. And this would have been what, like in the 2000s?
Early 2000s. So. I mean, and that's the thing too, like I was only doing it part time because I worked at Target for a number of years as well, and that's kind of like what kept me fed. And
yeah, then,
but also I hated it. But what I loved, you know, was the creativity. So I kept doing that. So that was always something that was never lost. Well, I want to say I lost, didn't lose sight of it, but it maybe got a little further away in some years. Like, where it's just like, I'm, you know, and that's the thing, like, you know, I'd gotten married. And I was comfortable. And so in that comfort, I was just like, you know, maybe this, you know, dream that I have, and I didn't, you know, maybe it wasn't even a solid dream. Like, maybe that's for someone else. Maybe I just, you know, don't want to do that.
Well, and what was the dream though for you? Like what?
Well, the dream for me, I guess, right out of college was like, I don't know, working for a studio or, you know, doing commercial work or doing stuff like working for an agency, basically. And that wasn't happening. A lot of the studios at that time had moved out of Chicago because of like tax breaks stuff and stuff like that. I think they've reversed that now. They're coming back. A lot of things are now filmed in the Chicago area. But yeah, so that's the thing. That was a loose dream. Like I'd never had a specific, you know, nothing specific. So I just kind of like was doing things here and there. Eventually I was like, I found that like I just don't like working retail at all. Like I just despised every aspect of it, and I'm like, okay, I got to get out of this. I can't do this anymore. So I started doing I did a couple of weddings for friends, and that's kind of what got me into filming more. I had a camera and. It's kind of like your buddy with the truck. That's the person that moves you. Your friend with the camera is the one that, you know, does all the weddings.
Yeah,
so.
Hey, I got a buddy. He's got one of those fancy new VHS-C camcorders.
It was a digital tape camcorder. I'll have you.
Nice.
It was like an old Sony, old Sony camcorder. And yeah, did a few weddings, I knew a little bit of editing, and I taught myself some more editing, so like that's thing too. So like, yeah, a lot of my film and editing stuff was post graduation from college. Like I did a lot of, I taught myself a lot of things in that respect, in that world.
Saturdays were made for creating, and Little Me's studio on South Main Street in Bourbonnais gets that, so that's why they have open studios Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's where your kids can drop in unannounced, practically. No registration is needed. You can pay at the door, and this is for kids 1.5 years old to 12 years old. And what you do is you drop in, you pick a project, and you let the creativity begin. Now, some of those activities include pre-sketched canvas painting, slime making, who doesn't love making slime, friendship bracelets, tote bag design, preschool art stations, and more. This happens most Saturdays, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Make sure you bring the kids 45 minutes before closing to make sure they have plenty of time to create. Little Me's studio at 441 South Main Street in Bourbonnais. Across from Olivet Nazarene University, if you have any questions or you want more information, you can always call or text 815-507-2051 or follow Little Me Studio on Facebook and Instagram at Little Me Studio.
So yeah, I started
it's
doing...
It's kind of surprising you didn't do more of that in school, though.
Well, I didn't... I mean, I had to enough to get my animations onto a tape or a DVD or something like that.
Yeah.
But that's it. Like that...
Yeah.
And I did a little bit of editing with that because I had to kind of put together a portfolio reel and stuff like that. But the only thing I really had to cut together was my film for my... It was called Film Tech. It was Film Tech 1 and Film Tech 2. And I actually had to splice the actual film... But from there, like that was probably the most editing I did. And that's the thing, like I knew I loved it. It was just like I knew I loved the animation bit of it more. So I tried that and then but that wasn't as consistent as I liked it to be. So yeah. Then I just started kind of tapping into other things. So the wedding thing kind of came along. Once I did a few weddings, I started looking on like Craigslist and online, job things, and just kind of started doing kind of odd jobs, video odd jobs for people, and found this guy, Dave Lanuti, is his name. And, I still hear from him every once in a while, and he was looking for shooters. He was looking for people to film weddings. And I was like, I don't have the most up-to-date gear and I don't, and I, this is kind of just like, a passion thing for me. What was cool about Dave is he was very business savvy, and he was also very, very open with his with his time in like sharing that with me and helping me become a better shooter, helping me become a better editor. And I still I pay that forward to everybody that I come in contact with too, because he was the kind of the first person that was like. He would take me on shoots sometimes, and he's like, I can't really pay you, but if you want to learn a bunch of stuff, come on in. So I was like, all right, cool. So sometimes I would get paid, sometimes I wouldn't. But I saw that as an opportunity to just, put more, I like to call it, put more tools in my, my Batman utility belt to be able to like kind of go out there and do my thing.
So he owned a company?
A videography and photography company, and I was one of his shooters, his videographers. And what was cool is like, yeah, he was like, hey, if you work these two events, I'll buy your gear for you. So I wasn't working for free. I was working toward something. And then he's like, after that, you make what everybody makes when you go out on shoots. I'm like, all right, sweet. That's awesome. And I did weddings for probably about somewhere between 7 to 8 to 10 years.
Okay.
And learned a ton about like just capturing events and working with people and just a lot of, how to conduct yourself, in those places.
Oh, especially at a wedding.
Oh yeah. Well, I maybe you don't even know this about me. Like as a kid, I was really shy. I'm really shy. Like I'm not somebody that jumps at the opportunity to like be in front of the camera or, even be in front of like a bunch of people and talk about things. So like I'm a little bit more, When I get to know you, I become kind of boisterous and stuff like that.
Yes.
But as a teenager, as a college kid, I was just kind of I was the guy that kind of stood back.
I think that's one of the reasons why you and I clicked.
Yeah,
I'm the same way. So I'm kind of shy, and when I get to know someone, then
yeah, it takes me a second. So, going into events where I don't know anybody and I have to get them to kind of interact with me, that was a lot of learning the camera stuff. That was easy. That part was the hard part was,
interacting
and just getting people to like, respond to you. Cause sometimes, when you pull the camera out, everybody's like, looks at you and there's like
they're like you have a gun.
Yeah. So you're like, you want to like, wave at them, smile, and make them feel comfortable. And, yeah, and
tell a terrible joke.
Yeah, exactly. Just to get them to laugh. So that was something I learned through doing that. And that's really where I kind of, I guess, you know, kind of got the reps in with, you know, doing film and doing that kind of stuff. And then with Dave, he then brought me on to do more like AV work in audio video work in some of the hotels in Chicago. He had a so to kind of supplement his income, like, because, you know, there's wedding seasons and then, you know, that dies down. So to supplement his income, you know, in the winter, he had, you know, he knew how to do live event stuff. So he did that in the winter. So he's like, hey, do you know how to work an audio board? I'm like, I have no idea how to work an audio board. He's like, do you know how to roll cable? I go, no, I don't know how to roll cable, but I can be taught that. That sounds like something I could do. So he, another training, basically, like he brought me in, and, you know, after rolling several hundred feet of cable, you get pretty good at it.
Yeah.
in one sitting. So, and then what was neat, and what I noticed, and even like when I was working with Dave, or it just working with any audio or video person, like, and really anybody that's passionate about their craft, is that once the job is done, and once you have all the kind of nitty gritty things done, like, you know, once I started asking them, like, hey, how do you work this? Or how do you do this on this thing? They're always like, you know, once everything was done, very open to like talking about, because if anything, AV guys just like, they love nerding out about gear, and they love talking about, oh, this does this and this does that and da 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 da. And so I took that to heart. Like, that was, you know, kind of, you know, on the job training for me, because it was, I just, like, I knew how to work hard. So they saw that, and then they were like, okay, cool, I'm going to share some of my knowledge with you. And I thought that was really cool that they were able to do that, and saw the potential, I guess, in me. And so, like, again, I like to kind of take that, you know, with anybody that I interact, you know, with our employees and with our interns here, just to make sure that, you know, people, you know, because everybody comes in at a different level, you know, and I think that I, you know, I took that to heart when that was, because I knew, I was like, oh man, I'm just a guy that doesn't know too much about this, but you want to teach me? Great.
That's, yeah, awesome. You're like, I got an animation degree and here I am rolling cables,
yeah,
and learning how to run an audio board. And, you know, how does this stream work, you
right?
Because you're probably, for those AV gigs,
there, yeah, I was doing a lot, like, of closed circuit stuff as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know.
Yeah. I mean, like running, and that's the thing, like, it was these big, like, you know, 5,000 person ballrooms, you know. So it's like, you know, the Dental Association of America would come into town, and
we would
basically, you'd have to mic them up, and you'd have to, and again, I think this is something that isn't taught as much or at all. It's like, it's those soft skills. Like, I had to, like, be able to, like, interact with those people too, and be able to, like, kind of, like, make them feel at ease, because they're, you know, they're talking to 10,000 people, and they, you know, they're going to be up there, and you know, and I'm, you know, and you know, I go like, hey, you know, I got your slides already. You're good. If you need anything, just let me know. You know, it's like, it's something that I've learned, is like making people feel comfortable in that space, because it's an awkward space to be in, you know, when you're up in front of people or in front of the camera. You know, it's something that is not as natural to all people.
Well, going back to what we were talking about, playing guitar.
Right.
You know, you should be focusing on that moment and making,
and not screwing up or not. You know,
yeah, right. Or, you know, worrying about the slides on the screen if they're going to go at the time you need them to go, or
right,
all
right,
that stuff. So.
So from there, let's see. From there.
when does Raven spring?
So when the housing crash happened.
Like 2008-ish.
Yeah. So weddings and wedding and live events took a hard hit, because those 10,000 people events turned to 2,000 people events.
Yeah.
And the weddings, you know, people that had, you know, that couple thousand dollars for a wedding video and photography didn't have that money for that. So that got kind of light. So I was like, ooh. So just, in, you know, as that happened, I went to Craigslist and online, and just like, okay, looking just for editing jobs and, or, you know,
anything.
Videography, something. Yeah. And then I found a part-time editing job with a ad agency that did direct marketing ads and nationally.
Wow.
Yeah. And worked with them for, I think, about 4 or 5 years and learned a ton of stuff. And, but still feeling kind of like unfulfilled. Like I was doing something, but I was like, I wanted to do it on my own. And
was that a lot of photography?
No, it was a lot of videography.
It was a lot of video.
We would go to like San Diego and shoot at a studio there. We would go to, I think Atlanta was maybe one. It was somewhere in the South. But yeah, we'd go to various studios. We would even shoot stuff around the Chicagoland area because they were located up north. It was, learned a bunch of stuff about, you know, like bigger shoots, how to plan for those, working with three or four streams of cameras. That was something new because I had never done that before. And like working with like national campaigns, you know, and like, you know, they have a certain brand, they have a certain, you know, all of these things. So that was something I was like, oh, okay, cool. This is awesome. Like, I'm learning something new. But like I said, I just didn't feel whole yet. So
you probably felt more like a number at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. Know, I felt there was something more that I could be doing. And then that's kind of like the genesis of Ravenspring, to be honest with you. Like, I started doing some stuff on my own, and then that, I wouldn't say it really took off, but I started doing more projects. My name started getting out there. I also started making myself just more available to the community. Like, that, if there's something I could tell myself at the start of that, and even anybody that's starting something new, you know, I wish I could have like just hold myself by the head and like say, hey, no one knows what you do. Talk to people, you know, like you have to talk to them. Like I was just like, I don't know, this pretentious artist thought like, well, everybody knows what my work is. You know, it's like, no, they don't.
No.
Dummy. Yeah. Like get off your butt and start doing something and talking to people. And so I talked to like, you know, the Bill Yonkas of the community. And like I said, he was one of the first person I talked to, like, Bill, like, who should I talk to like just kind of get involved in stuff? And he was like, oh, Brian, you know, Bill's an idea guy. So he connected me to two, to five people, and those five people connected me to five people. And that just kind of, you know, went from there. And, that's Ravenspring. Like, Ravenspring, lasted 8 years, and
when did that start? Like the 20 early 2010s or mid?
I would say probably more like mid, like early, or maybe early to mid. I would have to look that up because it was, I think I've been doing on my own. Maybe I think it's been about 10 years now, maybe more like 11, maybe even more than that. But yeah, Ravenspring was like right around then. And then yeah, that was solely video production, some photography and some animation. But it was mostly video, like, you know, telling stories of small businesses and organizations and stuff like that. It was something that I was just like, it felt good to do, and it felt good to do in my community as well. It was my obligation, you know, to kind of give back a little bit to my community.
I mean, obviously that's still what you're doing with Pathfinder too.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's the same thing. It just, now it's a bigger company, right, with more services offered, and it's a full service instead, right, of just the portion you were doing with Ravenspring. Now, didn't you have someone else working with you on Ravenspring, or was that just you?
It was just me for a little while. I did have Catherine, who works for us now, working part-time. I did have another full-time, I guess it's more like a part-time editor. But yeah, that was it. Like, it was mostly me working with Ravenspring. know, I obviously came across Jesse Erickson, and I don't know how we really originally met. It was probably through
Barbie, or something.
It was likely through Barbie.
Yeah. Which she Barbie was probably Watson. Doing.
She was probably doing the chamber.
The chamber at the time, yeah. The Kankakee County Chamber.
So yeah. With that, you know, I was like, this guy's a smart dude. He really knows his stuff. But didn't really think anything of it at that time. We kind of like, we talked about this Pathfinder for years. Like it was kind of just like something we would mention, and then it'd be like, okay, well, I guess we're not doing it. You know, it didn't ever like really culminate into anything. But COVID happened, and I don't know if that was the catalyst of it or it just happened to happen at that time. But over COVID, and this is the thing, like we had been talking maybe like pretty heavily, like for the 6 months before that, like, oh, you know what, if I'm going to grow in Raven Spring, because he was running his own business Catalyst, and working with like business solutions and marketing solutions. If we're going to grow our businesses, we're going to be growing into each other's respective areas. And we decided pretty early, like right away, like we didn't want to do that. One, because I'm like, I know I need to grow, but I don't know that section of the business as much as he does. And I was like, I don't really want to. Like, I like being creative, so I like doing that part of it. And he didn't want to, you know, he didn't want to be a creative. He didn't want to do that. So we decided pretty quickly, like, oh, okay, well, maybe we should partner up. So we did. I think we worked on a few projects separately, but together. Like, we were still our separate entities, but we worked on a project together and found that they worked out. Like, I think one of our first things was Manteno Oktoberfest. And then there was a couple other things after that. And then we found that, like, hey, this worked out pretty good. Like, I took care of the production part of it. He took care of the business and
the
marketing bit of it.
Yeah.
So I was like, cool. All right. This works. So then with that, we were like, well, we're kind of missing a piece. We need, if we're going to be a marketing company, because that's really what we wanted to be, like, we need a web part of that. So we started talking to another friend of ours who owned Link Point Media, Josh Lundmark, and we were like, hey, we want to, and we've been talking to him too about this as well, but you know, he was kind of like, you know, kept pushing us kind of back, like, just, and not in a bad way, just something like was like, just, you know, something else, like it was something else. And we find out that, like, oh, he was planning on, he's like, I don't want to own a business anymore. I want to
get out.
I'm going to get out. And then I'm moving, and he moved to Georgia, and he was, cause he liked to do the back end stuff. He like, you know, creating
coding like
and doing the, you know, doing the web development kind of stuff. So that was his thing. He's like, I'm just kind of burnt out and owning a business. And I mean, I get it. Like it's a lot of hard work. And you know, he was in the same boat as Jesse and I, like he'd been doing it for so long that he was just like, I'm burnt out. I can't do this anymore. So we made him an offer for his business, and he agreed. And that basically, so Pathfinder is Link Point Media, Raven Spring Creative, and Catalyst Business Solutions is Pathfinder. And, that's the history, like that. Yeah. That's where we are now.
More have been acquired since then, you know, as we've talked about.
Yeah, like, so we acquired Kinky Podcast, yeah.
And Converge,
Converge, and Frame. InFrame is Logan, and yeah. That's slowly moving along. But I mean, like this, and like we're growing so fast in other areas. Some things have to. I mean, we have to kind of hit the brakes on some of the other things. But
yes,
yeah. There's a like. There's a lot of growth. There's a lot of opportunity to keep growing as well. We're doing things in Frankfurt and up north, and I've been traveling a ton this summer for a client, and that's kind of a first for Pathfinder. I mean, that's the thing too, is like Jesse and I joke about this all the time. Like, we feel like we've owned this business for 10 years, but it's only been two. Like, it's only been 2 years.
It does. I haven't even been here that long, and it seems like Pathfinder has been around longer than three.
Right. And I think it's years. Because we've been in this community. We've been in this, all of us have been in this community for yeah. longer periods of time, but Pathfinder is only 2 years old. And that's kind of baffling to me and even to people that I talk to, but it's pretty exciting. You know, we're growing our podcasting division with, yes. with you.
Very grateful to be a part of that.
We're glad to have you on board too, man. It's been an awesome ride. I love seeing all the things you're doing, and I love seeing, and being a part of some of the things that you do too. So it's been a treat for me as well. So,
oh, thanks, man. Yeah. And I mean, you know, bringing that up too, you know, with Pathfinder acquiring Kankakee Podcast, that was just a sole proprietorship for me. I owned that myself through right. my own LLC. So I was getting used to being my own boss, which has its pluses and minuses, as you know.
It does.
And, you know, I know that was one of the things that I was hesitant about walking back into was, you know, I knew that with selling the company and selling Kankakee Podcasts that I would be answering now to someone
right.
again. And, you both, you and Jesse and Jeff and everyone have definitely have a different approach to, you know, being a boss or being a leader and all those right. things. And it's made it's been refreshing. I haven't felt like, you know, chained or anything like that, cool. you know.
And, well, yeah, I think we were talking before the podcast, and I said I hate the word boss.
And yeah, and that's kind of what I wanted to lead into, yeah, you know. And I just want to attest to that, and being a employee here, and right. you know, like you, I mean, yes, you are one of my bosses, but you don't like that term.
No, and I want you, because, and Jesse and I both believe this, but I want you, you know, we want to surround ourselves with other people that are good at the thing that they do. I'm not good at podcasting and finding people to do that. And so like you are. So I was like, okay, Jake's our guy. We want him to do those things. You know, you're a important piece of the puzzle. You're a part of the team. And I don't know. To me, a boss tells you how to do your job, and a boss, you know, is this authoritative figure. And that was something I never wanted to be. I mean, hell, if you would have asked me this 5 years ago, I don't know if I would have said, oh, yeah, I'm going to be a owner of a business that has 17 employees and own, you know, has a building or on the floor. And, you know, and
you probably still can't believe that. Right?
I can't. I cannot.
I'm still
it is still something that is very. It feels weird. And then when people, you know, like tell me it, and I think this is just my personality. I just kind of like, oh, well, yes. You know, I just got,
you know, right.
Like,
yeah.
It's anybody could do this, you know, like, and it's like, no, like you're doing some really cool stuff. And once I take a moment, I'm like, oh, wait, you know, I shouldn't just blow that off like that. I'm very grateful, and I'm very lucky that I get to do what I do, and I get to work with the people that I work with. Because we work with a bunch of talented people here, and I couldn't be more excited for the future of Pathfinder than I am right now, because it's just so refreshing and so just inspiring to work with people that are at the top of their game in our community. And it makes me kind of, you know, giddy whenever I think about it. It's like, oh wow, this is really cool. Like I can't believe this is my life. You know, like this is awesome.
Yeah.
Is it exhausting at times? Well, yeah. I mean,
of course. Yeah. I mean, sure. You've got a much bigger team now than when you were just Raven Spring.
Right.
But I would be curious to know, like, what have been some of those I don't know if transitions is the right word, from going from, you know, Raven Spring, where it's mainly just you, like you've got like one part-time person, maybe another part-time person, but you're like, you're still pretty much doing everything in Raven Spring. And then you go from that, and then all of a sudden you've got almost 20 people and you're one of the higher ups.
Right.
You know,
that has been probably the hardest thing to do, to unravel myself from all of the things that I do, because like I said, I don't want to be a boss. I want to be a leader, and I want to be a leader, that perpetuates, you know, good behavior and hard work and continual learning and just and creativity. But like that, all of that was really hard for me to kind of grasp and put forward, because like you said, like when it was just me, it was like easy, like, okay, Brian, go do the thing. Brian goes, does the thing. Like now it's like, you know, hey, Matt, go do this. Hey, Quinn, do this. Hey, so-and-so, hey, Jake, you're doing this. And also keeping track of all the, you know, all the things that are going on too. Just it took a lot, but, and I trust all of you implicitly because you're all good at your jobs, but it was very hard for me to kind of give up a lot of those things.
What's been the hardest thing to let go of? I would imagine it's more of like the video aspect. It's
like the video editing and the video production. Like I have a say in a lot of that still, but I'm not doing as much of it as I'd had in the past. And then it's just hard. Like it's hard. It was really easy thinking in a first person, mindset, and it was really hard to think in a team setting for me, because I knew what I needed to get done, but I wasn't entirely sure sometimes, or even good at explaining like what I needed a certain team member to do, or even what their job should be. So I had to do some reflection on that, and like, okay, what are the jobs Brian is good at that no one else can do? Okay, that's over here. What are the things I can hand off, or that I need to even hand off? That was hard. I mean, I'm still probably dealing with that. But I think I've gotten better at being able to kind of, you know, see your, you know, what your strengths are and what this person's strengths are, and kind of playing into those. I mean, that's something too. Like I want everybody to be curious and keep learning. So if there's something that anybody wants to learn more of, I'm more than happy to teach them something else. But I definitely want to play into their strengths. But yeah, it has been an adventure, and not always easy.
Yeah.
But
what are those things that you found like that you do enjoy the most, that you still like hold on to and you don't delegate them to someone else? Like, what are some of those things that you're still like, you know what, this is like my favorite thing to do, or this is like, I really like doing this, so I'm going to still continue to do it.
I still like doing like the, kind of like the planning of a project. I like the, you know, like kind of the brainstorming of that. I do still like also, the physicality of shoots, like going, like being a part of a shoot and being a part of that, you know, and I don't know. I think that it's the tactileness of like having a camera in your hands and stuff like that. That is still kind of really just, I love new technology, and I love having the camera in my hand. So there's something visceral about that. Like I always just like kind of like, oh, cool. Another new piece of product, you know, another piece of equipment. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. It's another problem to solve, right? Like and that's kind of creativity in a nutshell. So like getting a new piece of gear is always exciting to me, and being able to use it and being able to tell the story. Like, So I don't know if that answers your question.
No, I think it does. Yeah. There is a, like an adrenaline rush that you can get from going out on a shoot, depending on what it is. I mean, sometimes we have to do shoots or recordings or whatever that we're just not super pumped about. You know?
But and I mean, that's the nature of the business, right?
Yeah, it is of any business.
Yeah.
But, you know, if it's one, if you like particularly like shooting on location and you're like, I really love shooting live music, like that gets me going, you know, getting those really great shots of the lead vocalist or the and drummer.
Yeah. And we, you know. we just shot a live music event recently. And we do a few of those a year, and there is something when you can kind of just like vibe with the crowd. Like there's something like you get that energy, and be able to capture that energy, is there is something to that. There is something very exciting, and just it's really cool when, you know, when we can come back and you see that and we've captured it, and it's like, oh man, awesome, we did it, you know. We, because that, I mean, that's really at the end of the day, that's what the client wanted us to do, you know. So when we're able to do that, that makes me happy. I love when projects come together. I love seeing, the thing that I love the most about my position now is seeing all the people that are on the production team doing their thing and like excitedly talking about it, like to you or, you know, to any of the other team members, and just kind of like sitting back like a proud dad, you know, just like, this is awesome. Like, this is really cool. Like, and, or somebody figuring something out for the first time, you know, for me, like, it's like, cause I've like, oh, I've been there. Like, that is awesome that like, that you figured that out. And then, and that we've given them the space to do that as well. I love that aspect of it. Like I said, you know, me figuring out how to unravel myself from some of those things, but the things that I love the most are like seeing the people excel at, you know, and then also, you know, being okay in some of the failures, because we can't be perfect all the time, and failing is a part of learning. So
yeah. What do you want people to know about Pathfinder, or what do you want their takeaway to be when they hear about Pathfinder?
I mean, I can give you the generic sales thing.
You're not Logan.
No,
you're
I'm
Brian.
Not Logan. I'm Brian. I would like to tell people that, I mean, we are a full service marketing company. That's what Logan will tell you. But I mean, I don't know if everybody understands what that means, but at the end of the day, and like I said, creativity is problem solving. Like we solve clients' problems, and their problem is maybe they're not getting enough business, or maybe they're not getting enough clients seeing their work. Like, then that's where we come in. We tell stories. So I would like to, you know, like we tell stories through video, through graphics, through photos, through all of those things. Here's the thing I think I would like everybody to know the most is like we do it in a way where it's affordable to everyone. Like, it's, you know, it isn't cheap, but it also, like, we aren't just, you know, doing things for, you know, Fortune 500 companies. We're doing stuff for smaller businesses and larger businesses as well. The thing I think Jesse and I pride ourselves on is like we want to always be a resource for that entrepreneur that is looking to, you know, have their idea out there. So we want to work with our clients, and, you know, wherever they're at, and that could be anywhere. You know, like, that can be they're just starting, or that they could have been open for, you know, 10 or 15 years. I think that's what I'd like everybody to know, is like, it's marketing and storytelling is essential to get the word out there. And we would love to be able to tell that story for you. And we pride ourselves in making it easier. Cause at the end of the day, it's about the bottom line for everybody. So we try to make it as easy as possible, to make that barrier of entry a little lower, so that, so you can get the word out about, you know, your product or your podcast or this, that, or the other thing. So, and for us, that's exciting, because then, it, you know, we get to work with this restaurant, or we get to work with this non-for-profit, or we get to work, you know, that's exciting to us. You're like, we want to work with everybody as much as we can. So that's what I want everybody to know.
What's a dream project for you that you've been wanting to do for a long, something you've been wanting to do for a long time that either you've been hoping like someone would come through the door and they're like, hey, we want to do this thing. And you're like, oh my gosh, I've always wanted to do that.
I would like to, I'd like to maybe do a documentary, like a full, like on documentary. I don't know how that would fit into somebody's, whatever, but I mean, that could be, it could be something.
Yeah.
I'd also like to do, something animated.
I was going to ask you, do you do much animating anymore these days?
I actually, recently we've been working with a client that has been utilizing some animation. So we've been doing, within the last maybe 9 months, I've been doing a lot of animation.
That's what I mean. I don't know if I've ever seen any of your work.
We've done, I don't know if I can talk about it because of the client, but we've done a few animations and really that's a growth area. Like we want to start growing into that more. I still love doing it. I still keep up with it as much as I can.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, that is definitely something I would love to do more of. And there's so many cool tools out there to use, like, you know, technology and AI. AI is not scary. It's a tool. It's another tool to use. So I would like to, a documentary would be cool. And then, I don't know, like an animated, maybe like an animated series or an animated something, you know, a little bit more, you know, because I go back to my roots of like drawing characters and stuff like that. Doing some characters, that'd be fun.
Gosh, that'd be awesome. Yeah. We need to work on that. Work on our own little cartoon.
Yeah, series. Actually, Shai and I have had an idea of like we wanted to cartoonize everyone in the office.
So okay,
we're maybe in you know when there's some slower times we can do that.
What slower times? What are you? What are you talking?
We have less slower, busy, I guess.
We have less busy times. What are you talking about?
Not right now.
What would the documentary be on? Or is there like a documentary you've always kicked around in your head? You're like, I would love to do a documentary about this. Actually,
I mean, I do, and I think this is one I've talked to you about. Mm-hmm. Is the Kankakee Museum found some footage. I think this was right before COVID. Just found this DVD labeled, I think it was like 1939 or something, and it was footage of Kankakee County of like in its heyday, like in the golden age. And I was just like, what? What is the story of this? Like, this is crazy. Like, why does this even exist? First of all. So that's something I kind of would love to dive into a little bit more. I know Kankakee has a rich history, and I'd love to kind of dive into that a little bit more, because in the very brief research that I did about that,
that footage you found,
about that footage is that a company that did it basically worked in the Midwest and did that for, I would say, you know, like kind of big to mid-sized cities. Like they would come into your city, take some B-roll of the things going on, and then go to the local theater and then, you know, splice it together, go to the local theater, and that would be kind of like a little sizzle reel basically for your community. And people love that because it's like, oh my gosh, remember that? Yeah, oh, they're so-and-so, you know? Like, because some of the footage was like, there was like airplane footage of downtown Kankakee, like people flying over the city. There were there were dancers. There were a lot of like street shots of Schuyler and of Court Street, and like booming. Like it was like there was bunches of cars, bunches of people, bunches of shops. You know, so just a. You know, like I said, the golden age of Kankakee, and I would love to kind of dive into that more, and even fun. And more and even just figuring out like okay, maybe this, there's other films that have been unearthed, you know, and about, and of, you know, because that's the thing, like, I feel it's like a lot of the, basically like the, what do they call it? The Rust Belt, you know,
yes,
where a lot of the industry has gone away and a lot of these booming towns at one time basically folded in on itself. I feel like Kankakee, his history is that, and just, you know, recently within the last, let's say 5 years, is really, you know, striving to, you know, shrug that off and look to the future. And, you know, people are investing into buildings. People are investing in building businesses here. We're investing in building a business here because we see the opportunity. We see the need for it. And you know, everything comes, you know, goes in cycles. And but I would love that. Yeah, that'd be something I'd love to kind of dive into more.
Yeah.
So, in my spare time.
Right. Yeah. We have so much of that spare time going back to that. Yeah. I would be totally down for that.
Cool. Yeah. We should talk about that more then.
Yeah.
I should show you some of the footage. Like
I still haven't seen any of that.
Yeah. It's wild. Cause the museum asked like, what should we even do with this? And yeah. I was like, this is a treasure trove and I have no idea. I'm like, we need to we could easily make a documentary out of this like that because there's so much Kankakee is dripping with history. So, I mean, it's not easy to make a documentary, but it'd be easy to find like just the stories that are there. Like I think because they're all there.
Right.
Connecting those stories, I think would be really cool just because I think, We get told a lot that in our area, you know, like, oh, Kankakee is this, that, or the other thing, and maybe that's a negative, and it has been a negative for such a long time that you know, being reminded like, oh, hey, there was a golden age, there was a heyday at one point. Yeah, there's been some bad times, but we're coming into the good times again. So, be a part of the solution rather than being a part of somebody sitting on the couch being negative. Like that's easy. Right.
And it takes time.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of time and effort.
Yeah.
So that's another reminder.
Be lend a helping hand where you can.
Yeah.
That's kind of my philosophy. Because I was at one point, I was that person.
Me
too. On the couch.
Me too.
You know, blaming Kankakee for this, that, or the other thing.
Yeah.
Until I started getting involved in the community more, I realized like, oh, this is a really great community. And I'm the jerk for not realizing that.
Yep.
So being able to like understand that and being able to like, you know, I would have never met you or many of the other people that I call friends if I wouldn't have taken that leap.
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful for that. So grateful for that.
Me too, man.
Yeah.
Me too. Well, this has been fun. I know
we could
go on forever.
Yeah.
There's so many different things we could get into, but is there anything else?
We'll just have to do another one.
We will. We should. And actually, we have talked about, you know, there could be potential for you guest hosting an episode too.
Yeah. We talked about some film things, and I would love to.
Because
there's been some films that were filmed around here, and
right.
I would love to get into that. That'd be really cool.
Yeah, I think
that'd
so be neat. Brian Prairie might be back in the form of a guest host. But yeah, I mean, we didn't even really talk about Leadership Level Up in depth, but, you know, if people want to hear conversations, Jeff and Brian together, you know, check out the Leadership Level Up podcast.
Yeah, that'd be great. It's a podcast about my leadership journey and Jeff's leadership journey. Obviously, Jeff is leading leaders. Like he's the one teaching him. I'm kind of, in the educational part of that, like becoming that leader and my story with that. And it's been a journey and it's been windy and, like with all things, there are some hard times and there's some, easy times. So, but, that's like, and we talk to, leaders that are at the, you know, kind of top of their field and, talking about all the things that, you know, what makes a good leader and what, you know, and also just like what makes a good human being, like those things really kind of go hand in hand. Like it sounds silly sometimes, but it really is like it just, and I think as a leader, sometimes you can feel isolated. And I think what's nice about doing the podcast is like, oh, you're going through that too? Oh, man, yeah. So, okay, yeah. You're not just going through those things on your own. So, yeah, leadership level up. Listen to it.
Yes, check that out.
Man, this has been fun. And where does the time go?
It goes by quickly.
I feel like we were just horsing around, and then all of a sudden, you know, an hour and a half has gone by, and here we are.
I wasn't even looking at the clock. How long has it been? Has it been an hour? Probably.
Yeah, I think it has been about an hour. Yeah,
something like that. Yeah. But
it's been awesome, man. I'm truly honored, and I truly respect all the things you do. It's so great.
Thanks, man.
And it's so great that you're a part of the Pathfinder team. I think it's just really cool. I'm excited.
You.
I'm excited for what Kanky Podcast will become, and I know it'll become something truly remarkable because you're one of the people behind it. So.
Thank you. I am seriously so honored to be able to work with you and to work with Logan and Jesse and Matt.
Matt, our producer,
and everyone else at Pathfinder. Everyone's been so welcoming. You know, it's been at this point almost 5 months, I think. Something like that.
Well, like I said earlier, we wanted to plug you in and you keep doing your thing. Because we didn't want to interfere with that. You had a good thing going, and we're like, let's just amplify that. Like we don't want to do anything to change Jake. Like Jake is perfect how he is.
I don't know about that, but thank you. And you know, it's like I said, it's just an honor to be able to work
with
you.
So. Yeah, man.
And learn from you as well. One of those things you've been teaching me a lot about color correcting.
Yeah.
So you know,
a little harder being colorblind.
I think I'm getting better at it.
Oh, good.
Know? So yeah, you know,
it's all about the scopes.
It's all about the scopes in Premiere Pro there. Yeah. So, but yeah. No, thanks again. Thanks.
You're welcome,
again,
man. I'm always glad to help. Like as long as it's, you know, I think that's kind of my heart. Like I always want to help. Like that's just something I want to do. So that kind of just goes with what we're doing here at Pathfinder. So mm-hmm. Yeah.
Same here. I'm always happy to help.
Awesome. This river carries on.